Hello, and welcome to episode 121 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and I'm joined by the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man whose autobiographical film was called Nico, it's Tony Esmond.
Oh, we're going to talk about that in a bit, aren't we?
I think he
appears in something we'll be talking about.
He does. Mm.
Yeah.
It's a shame he doesn't have any run in it. It's hard to illustrate that in comics, Steven Seagal's run. Yeah.
Steven Seagal's run.
It's not the best run.
No.
He puts up a good fight, though, in the comic. He does well.
I'm sure there's a lot of our listeners who know what we're talking about. But in this week's show, there's going to be probably a lot of action-packed talk. But before we get onto that, let's give a shout-out to our sponsors. Good old Comic House. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, this one, another show is brought to you with the help of them. Not only are they helping keeping the lights on but giving you episodes for free every week, but they're kicking ass in the name of independent comics. So if you go to the website comichouse.com, you can find a whole boatload of awesome indie titles to purchase, including Dan Butcher has added even more of his comic, haven't you, Dan?
Yeah, I spent some time yesterday. I've uploaded, there's 1 to 11 on Vanguard on there at the moment.
Oh,
and I've got 12 and 13 have got to be proofread by the lady that does my proofreading. So as soon as they're done, they'll be on there.
Oh, he's got staff.
Yeah.
I didn't know he had staff.
Yeah.
We're his staff.
Yeah.
You read the webcomic, it's full of errors and
don't say that,
typographical Dan. Mistakes. But the print copy has gone through a proofreader. So, yeah. If you want to get an insight to how shit my English is, look at the webcomic.
You're like the Jackie Chan of comics.
Yeah.
You're not really. I'll take that back.
No. Yeah,
not that good. Horrible.
Yeah. Dan is filled with so many metal plates keeping his body together. That much is true. So you've got Vanguard on comichouse.com and so much more. So, anyone who... And also, creators that want to get involved in comics... They can upload their stuff to Comic House. They only charge a penny commission for every copy sold. I remember Pete from Comic House got in touch because my sponsor ad last week was just a rambling mess, as they always are.
What's the difference?
Yeah, but he thanked us as always and gave me a bit of clear info. So because as we all know, they've got the app coming out. So you know,
yeah, I got an email about that this week. Did I want to have a go on the beta?
Oh,
nice.
And do you want to go on the beta?
Yeah, I said, I'll do that. I don't know what it means, but I will.
That's going to be great. So many people read on the app page and people saying, oh, this is going to be a game changer. I really hope it is.
Yeah, I hope so.
There's going to be a lot of titles on there.
I think it's going to be good for creators as well. Because the app, there's going to be a 50-50 split. So 50% of any subscription revenue and advert revenue will be put in a pot and split between the creators based on how many times their books were read.
Cool.
So there you go.
Interesting.
And also, if their print copy is available for sale on Comic House, that will link from the app so people can buy a copy if they like what they've read on the app. So there you go.
Okay.
And the other 50% will go toward, the other 50% goes towards the hosting costs and setting up the site in the first place. Blah, blah. So, you know, great. They're doing the best that they can for the indie scene, so it's well worth checking out. So go to comichouse.com. If you want to find out more about the app, go to comichouse.com/app and check it out today. Right, this week we're very pleased to be joined by a creator whose credits include such fine titles as the Legend of Ricky Thunder, Sex Castle, which is a favourite amongst a lot of our listeners, Rick and Morty, and two epic new books called Rock Candy Mountain and Kill 'Em All. I know that a lot of our listeners are already fans of his work, and when a writer comes up with dialogue such as, he's got punch diarrhea and their faces are the toilet bowl, you know we just had to have him as a guest. So it's our pleasure to welcome Kyle Starks to the show. Hello.
It's me, I'm here.
Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Kyle.
You didn't mention Dead of Winter. It's about a dog fighting zombies.
Oh,
yes.
That's a good one.
I was writing out this huge list, and I just
I know.
Can I mention them all?
It's a list of six things.
Listen, dude, you blew up half a city and shot a man's penis off, so what can you do about it? Do you know what I mean? It's like...
That's right.
Yeah. In the books, I hope. He hasn't... Who knows?
We write what we know, guys.
No, Kyle is someone that we've certainly been introduced to his work since starting the show. And yeah. I think Sex Castle was the first one that we heard about. Was that the first one?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a gift to Dan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
One of our listeners, Sarah, brought it along to Dan at the show.
And it's been Rob Jones mentioned it, actually, when he first came on.
Yeah. Oh, of course
kind
he
of
did.
Flew under the radar.
Yeah.
Who did?
It's a chap named Rob Jones. He does paper cuts and ink stains, like a comic book collective. And he mentioned it. Yeah, it must have been over a year ago.
Yeah,
it would have been.
I feel old. But you have a lot of people over here reading your books and telling us to read your books. And now that we've read your books, you've got fans for life. We want to be your best friend.
Yay! that sort of feels like the tendency. Is like, if I can get one person to read, they're in. The thing is, just no one reads it. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, your work has it's got its own style and its own unique voice. And I think if someone taps into that, they're not going to leave you alone, are they? And you're certainly prolific. You don't mess about.
No. I had 4 books come out last month.
Nice.
For fuck's sake.
Oh my god.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
That makes.
We were saying we blasted through Sex Castle and Kill 'Em All like in one sitting for both of them.
I love the fact that Dan just sort of says I blasted through Sex Castle, and that's just that's fine.
real casual, like too, huh?
Yeah.
He started disrobing and saying, "Look at my Sex Castle."
Oh no! Oh no! I think my books on the shelf look like they're like, you know, 200 pages, but I think they take like 45 minutes to read. Like you could have a good bathroom break and shoot through either one of those books. So.
Dude, you're gonna get piles if you spend that long in the toilet. I gotta tell you.
Well, it depends.
Yeah,
depends on how good the book is. Depends on how good the book is.
But that's because of the movement in it. It's such sort of fast paced. I bought your books on Comixology, and like just flicking the page, watching it all happen. You know, there's a real movement to it. You know.
Yeah, thanks, man. But, I mean, I think action. I think is really underrated in comics, and I think comedy is really underrated in comics, and that's I take real serious, which I think is pretty clear. But I think there's a way to do it that's more interesting than the way it's always been done, which is kind of a poppy thing to say. But I remember like. Well, I think we're getting to this. When I first started comics, I remember it's relatively recently, is also the time like I finally got Kirby, right? Like when I was younger, I didn't get Kirby. I'll admit that I was dumb. I was a kid. But it's like, man, it's like the fight scenes are 2 panels.
Yeah.
You're not really getting your money's worth, right? I mean, like.
I agree.
I want to do 10 pages of fight scenes.
Yeah, I might always end up adding more pages to fight sequences. Like, I'll leave 3 pages here for a fight, and then it ends up being like 6 or 8.
Right.
And it's great to do, but it kind of, if you need that much fighting room, kind of, like you say, 2 panels for a fight, that's a bit anticlimactic.
Right. And if you're Kirby, you can pull it off.
Yeah.
But you have to be Jack Kirby to pull it off. When I did Rock Candy Mountain #1, which was my first like 22 issue page book, there's so much exposition I had to get in, and there was not enough fighting. So I think I have a 22 panel fight page. I had to get that fight in proper. You know, I couldn't shortchange the fight because I think, again, that pacing is really important. But also, I had to do it like something like an 18 or 22 page page. I can't remember now. It's the Punch Diarrhea page. It's very popular. I had to get that fight in. And now, like, you know, the thing is like, oh, I have to be more efficient with my fight sequences for these monthly books. But issue 6 of Rock Candy Mountain is entirely one fight, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Oh, nice.
Right, okay. Nice. Brilliant. Yeah, we'll definitely talking about that. I've got a page of notes here, dude. Yeah, loving that series. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I mean,
now, I think I heard you say on an interview, that one of your early influences was Byrne. Was it John Byrne? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, like, the general bit I do is, like, when I was young, John Byrne was the guy. I mean, Fantastic Four, Alpha Flight, X-Men, all of my favorite books in Next Men. I love Next Men.
Yeah.
That Zipatone OMAC book. Love John Byrne. I think John Byrne in that period was very, he was always even. It was always a superhero comic. They were always well done. There was always a little bit more than just dudes fighting, which is something that I think that is an influence to me. Like I think about when in the Fantastic Four when Reed brought in like Doc Ock and Banner and another baddie to like help his, like, that's very John Byrne to me. And I think a lot of that he drew from Claremont, because Claremont did similar things in X-Men, where it's a little bit more than just people fighting. But yeah, I was such a big John Byrne fan, but then I was out of comics for like a decade. And when I came back, people were like, oh, who are your influences? I was like, oh, John Byrne. And I was like, oh, and I was like, oh no. Like, what happened to John Byrne while I was gone? I was like, what happened is the internet. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, he became a bit cranky. Let's say cranky over that period, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a real, like, that the radio killed the video star type of thing with John Byrne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love this stuff. Some of when you look at some of the movement in characters like Puck and all this sort of thing, as they sort of do cartwheels, and you know, I'll definitely see that coming through on your work. Definitely.
Love Puck.
Yeah. Love him. Courtney. Yeah. Let's do a solo Puck book. I'm voting to do it. That'd be brilliant.
What will we call it? Who gives a Puck?
Shut the puck up.
Shut the puck up. Oh, yes.
Right out the gate. Going with the Kirby title. I like it.
So you were away from comics for 10 years. What brought you back to the fold, should we say?
It was one of two things, and I don't remember for certain. I started having children. I was about to have my... After my first kid, like... Yeah, thanks. Don't do it.
Too late. Yeah.
Oh, no. We had a kid. I had a job that I thought was going to be basically my career, my vanilla job. And after that first kid, you know, we planned the second one, but it was 2 years later, and I realized, like, my... any free time was gone. Selfish free time was going to be gone. And so I started thinking, like, what are the things that I wanted to do that I had never done? And one of them was to do a comic book, which if I was speaking to me now, I'd be like, oh, 22 pages. But for me, it was 180 page wrestling comic. So, but I did Legend of Ricky Thunder just to show to myself I could do something, and it ended up getting some attention from Comics Alliance, which is how basically my career started, because it wasn't my intention at all. I just wanted to show that I could do a thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I remember clearly someone introduced me to Jason. Do you guys know Jason? He did I Killed Adolf Hitler. And Jason is the one guy whose stuff I buy sight unseen. Like, I don't need like that week. I just go ahead and buy it. And I remember around the same time, if not before, someone was like, oh, you should check this out because I'm a Hitchcock fan, and it's very Hitchcockian. But it also does genre mashing, which is kind of my two favorite things.
Okay.
And I remember looking at, it was like The Last Musketeer or East Bank Gang, and going, man, I can do that. And then I did it. And so, like, here I am.
Okay.
Nice.
Cool.
And you haven't
Did you have any friends in the industry? Did you know anyone who was, you know, a comic creator or anything like that?
Nope. I knew nobody. A good story for that is, so I did Legend of Ricky Thunder as a webcomic. Comics Alliance picked it up. I did not have any intention for anyone to see it. I was just doing it to do it. And I did a Kickstarter because sort of the thing that was said is like, oh, you should come to some shows. You should come do some conventions. So I was like, cool. So I'm going to kickstart this. Also, I had a full job, so it was like extra money, which was nice. And I used the profits from that Kickstarter to go to a bunch of conventions. And one of them was Heroes Con, which is my favorite convention. Or at least very high up there to any other conventions listening. I love you all equally, but Heroes is kind of...
where is Heroes, for those people who don't know?
Charlotte. It's in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's very much just a creator show.
Okay.
So there's no celebrities, there's nothing. It's just all the people you know in comics pretty much every year. It's kind of the one show everyone sort of efforts. Okay. But the first one I did, in which I shared a table, I had nothing. I just had two books, literally two books, and maybe... I don't know. I had a mini comic and Legend of Ricky Thunder, and I sat next to another equally unknown person who had become one of my very best, if not, I often say my best friend. It's a very close. Eric Henderson. I sat next to Eric Henderson, and we were two nobodies in Nowheresville. And within a year of that show, she got Squirrel Girl, and I had Six Castle published by Image, basically.
Cool.
Oh,
nice.
Wow.
Excellent. Yeah.
Very quickly, Heroes is a show where I've made almost all of the people who I'm very good friends with. So that's not across the board. I made a lot of friends other places, but generally I will see them again at Heroes. So it sort of all comes back to that show.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that show. Yeah, I quite fancy that myself. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we suffer from what you suffer from, I think, Carl, where we have too many celebrities and too much crap that is mixed in and sort of dilutes the comic stuff. Do you know what I mean? A bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the direction these shows have to go to be profitable.
Sadly, we
would all like to go, hey, look, they made a movie of, I'm trying to think of the most recent non-superhero thing.
Oh, God. What's the Kingsman?
Sure, Kingsman. Like, oh, man, we're going to go to the store and buy, we are going to get excited about comics, but that's not what happens. It's just not how it works. But those people are excited about those type of stories. So it's not the result anyone wanted, but also it sort of keeps these conventions going, and conventions are income for a lot of people, and they're bonus income, and it's a good opportunity to sell your work yourself. And I found for me doing those shows and networking, but also me doing those shows and selling my stuff by hand has done nothing but good for me.
Okay.
As long as those shows keep going, that's fine. They can have as many celebrities as they want. That's fine.
Yeah.
Fine. And there was, I think now, a couple shows that used to here, they quit doing it. They just weren't in comics. They weren't doing the conventions anymore. Or they started adding people because you kind of have to. It's just the way it is. No one, like, I'm doing a show this weekend, Louisville City, everybody. I don't know if Louisville City. Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville City is not a real place. this weekend, but I'll be in Louisville, and it's like, well, it's kind of a smaller show. Jim Steranko will be there.
Cool.
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. He did Nick Fury amongst everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
He's got a great, what we call in this country, syrup. I don't know if this is real hair or not. I'm going to say Kyle, but...
I almost caught his hair on fire once in Heroes, actually. It's Charlie. It's back when I smoked, and I heard someone behind me, and I turned very quickly, and I had to do the thing where, like, my hand's going, it's going horizontal as I turn, and I see just this white plumage straight up and over.
And then Steranko went up like the Wicker Man.
Oh, man, you would look like an immediate, like a Roman candle, like a 5-foot Roman candle. But yeah, seriously, like, I mean, Steranko is, like, literally, I think it's fair to say that Steranko is one of the few living legends in comics that's still, like, even doing these shows. And I don't know how much of a draw that's going to be, honestly. You know, like, I don't know. I have no idea. And so, like, you would think, you'd be like, man, I did a show once where the Hernandez brothers were there, and just, like, no one kind of came. It's like, man, the Hernandez brothers, like, get out of your house. But no one, that's not what people want. They want to go see, I think the big draw is this, is whomever was underneath, like, the Princess Leia digital makeup on the last, like, what is that? Like, that's a person who's going to have their advertising. And people will be stoked about it. I know in the Midwest, like, in the Midwest, people love voice actors.
Like, right, okay. Yeah.
Sure. Well,
I mean, we've talked about it before, but one of the big draws I've seen at a convention was E.T.'s finger. That is a genuine story.
Yeah, the hand or just the finger?
I think the lady was just the call home finger, and you could have a photograph with her. She didn't have the finger with her. But yeah, no. Yeah. Well, okay.
I'm glad she's still out there making money.
Yeah, still milking it.
Yeah, good for her. Hey, that girl, that lady never had to work at a chicken plant, you know? That's good for her.
So when you've done this table at your first convention and you have got picked up, how did the actual look? We want to publish your book approach come? Did you have to pitch to you or
no? I got a really, like, if you're wondering, like, this will be a really sort of like instructional story. I don't have that. the next year, basically, I kickstarted Sex Castle. I self-published Sex Castle. And I was pushing that at Heroes the next year, as you do. You go to more shows, you push your book. And there's a place in Charlotte called Mertz, which is a soul food restaurant, and it's amazing. Right. If you go to Heroes, you kind of have to go to Mertz, but you can't go by yourself. You need a group. And a guy I knew, Chris Sims from Comics Alliance, I was like, are you going to Mertz? And I was like, yeah, but. I'm like, well, I'm going to come with you. He's like, yeah, but. It's like, well, I'm going to come with you, though. I don't care what your yeah but is, because I'm going to sit there quietly and eat my chicken. I don't care. I just want to go, and I can't go by myself.
Right.
And the yeah but ended up being that they were doing an interview with Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky, basically the first year of Sex Criminals. So,
right.
So I ended up having dinner with Fraction and Zdarsky and Sims, and I was introduced as having the best book of the year, which is like 2015 when I self-published it. And Matt very politely was like, oh, I'd like to see your book. I know for a fact if he says that to you, he will come and get your book. But because this was like the first or second year of Sex Criminals, they had one of the longest lines I've ever seen at a convention. Deservedly, that book is very good.
Yeah,
And they're both two amazing human beings who deserve all that success. I know for a fact that he's very genuine and he's very polite, and he will come and get your book if he says he will. But they were super busy, so I'm like, I'm just going to take it over there. I'm just going to take my. I hate leaving my table at shows. I almost never do it. Especially back then when every person who walked by was a potential sale. And I had to bark my books, which I don't have to do as much anymore, thankfully. Shows are a little bit less... there's still a lot of work, but it's a different kind of work now. Anyway, so I took my book over, and he said thank you. And apparently his plane didn't take off in time. And so he read the book on the plane and tweeted about the book, and I sold a bunch of copies. I was like, this is awesome. he emailed me, I think, the next week and was like, hey, do you want Image to publish this book? And I was like, well, sure, why not? And that was literally the point where, and to be frank, 2 months after that, after Image was like, yes, 2 months later, which would have been a month before the book came out or whatever the period was, I got a call from William Morris, which is a Hollywood agency here in America, the biggest one, frankly.
And yeah, we've heard of it, yeah.
Your book, yeah. We want to pitch your book. So we sold my book. We sold the option to the book right as the book came out. I mean, a bunch of crazy stuff happened, and it was never my intention, because, again, I had a good job. I have two kids. I'm just goofing around on comic books, you know? Like, I really enjoy making comic books. And it's nice to have a little additional income. But as that went, I lost that job. That the factory actually closed. It'd been here 140 years, and they closed the factory down, or the plant. It wasn't a factory, but the plant where I worked at.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, you know, we have theoretical option money coming. How about we try to make comics for a year? And that's also when I got Rick and Morty. So everything's been
just
a series of good luck, just a series of lucky breaks over and over. And over.
That is nice.
I wish I could be like, listen, guys, you have to get your tight 5 pages together. Here's how you got to write your form letter. It's like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah.
But I think the most important thing you said was... Yeah, the most important thing you said was you're making comics because you wanted to make them. You didn't make them for anyone else. You weren't writing to please a specific... You weren't writing a pitch for a Hollywood studio. You made comics that you wanted to make. And that's always... That will show in the finished product.
Yeah.
And that's what gets people reading and gets fans, really, doesn't it? It's that word of mouth, you know.
Yeah, I always tell people who when they ask, like, how do you... anytime I do a panel, at some point it comes up, you know, hey, how do you get into comic books? It's like, well, first of all, you have to make a comic book. That's very important.
Yeah.
Once you do that part, you have no chance. You have no chance of getting into it. And
a lot of people don't listen to that bit, though, Carl. I've got to tell you.
I mean, doing things great. Let me come back to that. The other thing I always tell people, always, number two, is make the thing you want to be in the world.
Right.
I made Sex Castle. I was watching. I actually had a different book lined up for Sex Castle and Kill Them All, but with Sex Castle, I was watching. They put Roadhouse on Netflix. I've seen Roadhouse 300 times, but they put it on Netflix. Yeah, I mean Netflix. They put it on Netflix, and I was like, I'm going to watch it again. And you know, I'm watching Roadhouse, and it's like, why isn't there's not other things like Roadhouse? Like totally, there's not. There's a movie called Never mind. It's not boring. It's not Bruce Reynolds. Yeah, it's a Bruce Reynolds movie, and it's called... I can't think of what it's called. It's really good. But it's not that good. But it's the same. Like, here's a tough guy in a small town. And it's still really common, but there's actually not that many of those films that are actually that type of film.
Mm. You got... Is it Walking Tall? That's a bit like that, isn't it, I suppose?
Walking Tall is real similar. But it's like, I really wanted to... So like, I want to make a Roadhouse. And it changed halfway through, where I was like, you know, I love 80s action movies. I want to make the best 80s action movie that wasn't made. But the thing is, I wanted to make... I feel like that thing's like, man, I wish there was more... I'm trying to think of a good... I remember when I was... I'm old. I'm 40 years old. But in the 90s, when like Belle and Sebastian first came out, Belle and Sebastian didn't sound like anything else. They just didn't sound like anything else.
Yeah.
And it's like, man... If you wanted to hear something that was Belle and Sebastian-y, but that wasn't Belle and Sebastian, you were completely out of luck, right? But if you were a musician at the time and you're like, man, I wish there was more Belle and Sebastian stuff, why don't you make some more stuff that's similar because you like how it sounds and it brings you joy? I'm down with that. Like, that's Tarantino's entire career. Make the thing you want to exist in the world. And I feel like that's the number two most important thing. And also, you'll never stop making that thing because you're going to give yourself a gift. And I'm, again... super lucky with Rick and Morty and with Dead of Winter that the licensed stuff I've worked on, I wanted to work on them. So I have nothing I look back on and go, well, that wasn't my best effort. I feel like I don't have a bad book. And a lot of that is because I'm in a position to make the thing I want to exist in the world.
Yeah, I get you.
I was going to come back to something, but I already forgot what it was.
I'm real down, man.
He's talking about making a comic, weren't we?
What's that, mate?
About making a comic, getting out there and making the comic as opposed to kind of...
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I often get asked is, how do you come up with your ideas? Like, do you ever get writer's block? And it's like, well, I don't. But it's literally my job to not get writer's block. So there's a whole process of making the thing. But here's a dash. So my wife, I went to art school. I was going to be a painter. I was going to be a fine art painter. By the way, that's a dumb idea. Don't do that. That was an idiot move on my part. But, you know, the collegiate life of someone who's a fine artist is completely different than anybody else. You work every day, and then after so many days, your thing has to be done, and you put it up, and everybody shits on it. And that happens at least every 2 weeks, if not every week. And you learn a lot about, one, no matter, you have to finish the thing. That's a very important skill you learn. And two, you learn how to look at yourself objectively. Mm. But those two things, I think, have done me very well in comics, because my thing is always, it has to be done. It doesn't have to be perfect. Being done is better than being perfect, because it will never be perfect. And if it's never done, it never exists.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I'll get you.
I can remember being in art school and they said, we can choose between fine art and illustration. And I was like, well, what's the difference? He goes, well, fine art, you don't get paid for it. And I was like, well, I'm going to be doing illustration then.
And illustration, you barely get paid for.
Yeah.
At least in fine art, you don't do it for exposure.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Well, you kind of do. That's what you're doing. You're doing like the window down the street. You're like, this is not a commentary on, like, I don't know, the tax incomes that I want with a goose on a marble. I don't know. That's a long time ago. I don't miss trying to do it.
You have to kind of live as a fine artist, though, don't you? You kind of, it's a whole lifestyle.
Yeah, you're also in fine art school. You're basically networking because you don't have any friends. Those, you might think those people are your friends, but they are not. They will stab you in the back in a heartbeat to get a spot from you. So it's the same thing. It's like networking. As you learn networking, and that you're always trying to meet galleries. It's just the things I learned were, like, I could have not gone to art school and still do what I am now. But I also started when I was 38 or 30, I guess 35 technically. I was old when I started. I had a lifetime's worth of experiences to put towards, you know, the act of actually making things.
Yeah.
But those are the things you need to learn. Like, don't even go to art school. Don't. Go to law school, please. this doesn't pay well. Like, it doesn't pay super well. This shouldn't be a goal. It should be something you like to do, and hopefully it works out.
Okay.
Talking a little bit about Sex Castle then, because we'll move on in a minute, but I read it this week, Sex Castle, and like the other boys, I tore through it. It was fucking brilliant. Really enjoyed it. But it also spurred me on to watch No Retreat, No Surrender 1 and 2, which I will never forgive you for.
Yes. Awesome.
To be fair. And now I just wondered what other sort of, because there's a for those that haven't read it, there's a host of characters who appear in it, and there's a Wesley Snipes, there's a Steven Seagal type person, aren't there?
Steven Seagal.
So where did all that come from? Was it from a genuine? I mean, it seems to be genuinely do love those movies. You enjoy them, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, yeah. So my. You guys, one of you has kids, right? Is that right?
Yes, I do. Yeah,
I do.
Yeah. I'm very careful with what I view in front of my children.
Mm, yeah.
My father was not. He put in any super violent, and like, I don't know if he didn't care or if he didn't know I was in the room because I was a very quiet, like, because I was in awe of Arnold Schwarzenegger shedding someone's head off with a thrown saw blade. I don't know. I saw all of them, and that was back in the days of...
Can you remember the first film?
No idea.
It's funny you said Commando is the one I remember. That's my first clip.
Commando is in my top five, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
And he kills the same guy about 10 times, because all the bad guys just have mustaches. It's amazing. Yeah.
It was a different time. It was a very mustachy time.
Tom Magnum was very cool at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It was once upon a time, like, you could slap that mustache on and run around and no one said anything.
I was watching, my dad was watching Rambo 2 and I snuck in and I saw the bit where he puts the bow straight through the dude's head and, like, pins into the tree.
Oh.
That'll stay with me.
I can't remember. There's just no way I can remember the first one. He watched, I mean, all of them. My father had, like, zero, like, he just watched whatever. Like, there's no, he wasn't discerning at all. So right. We watched all those terrible things.
I do remember going to a friend's house, and, like, his parents were just like, oh, you want a film from Blockbuster? And then they'd get us, like, Lethal Weapon, and we were, like, 8 or 9. And just start, we used to love it.
Webbing. A little too young, maybe.
Yeah.
same thing. Like, it's a bunch of stuff I shouldn't have watched, and when the time came, you know, there's a thing that's very popular to do, which is to do a satire of 80s action movies.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
And the reason why that is because doing satire of something like that is very easy. Like, doing a satire of Star Wars is very easy. Because of the tropes, they sort of all use the same tropes, and, you know, it's the same thing over and over. But I don't think satire is funny. Like, I mean, Naked Gun is hilarious, Airplane is hilarious, but after that, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
yeah. It's like, do you remember they made some of them just make a career of remaking TV series and old movies, like the Chips movie. I watched about 5 minutes of that. It's fucking awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't great. I thought it, you know what? It could have. No, that one was bad. I thought it was going to be. I kept waiting for it to be like okay, but it was not. Yeah, it was really bad. Yeah. That was a movie where they thought something was very funny, which was, I think, Dax Shepard's dick, and it wasn't. Like, it really wasn't. But they were not going to stop. They were not going to stop. Like, it's like they bought real estate on that joke, and they were building there because they had no other choice. But even those, like, I feel like those things, like, some of them, those are hit and miss. I mean, I thought the Baywatch one was fine. Like, way to go, be fine. That. It's Baywatch. But the ones that I'm talking about, like, Scary Movie, like, straight hard satires, which is like, look at us make fun of an entire genre. And I didn't want to do that. And I think my thing is, like, I understand the points of the story. Like, this is how you tell an 80s action movie story.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. It's like, I'm not making fun of anything. I'm literally writing a love letter. I did kill them all after I watched a bunch of John Woo movies because they weren't available for a long time. Yeah, and I was reminded how much I love John Woo movies.
Oh, God,
I want to write a love letter to John Woo. It turned out being something different, but it began that way.
It, to me, it starts like a stranger walking into a town. It's got that sort of Western feel to it, isn't it?
Yeah, Sex Castle is definitely influenced by Westerns, too, just in terms of how stories roll out. His name's Shane. Like, that's it draws pretty.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that myself, actually. Yeah, yeah, I can definitely see that. Yeah.
But, like, the book of the original Shane movie poster too. So, not being super stuffed with that.
You tell the story very straight, and as much like the 80s action films, they weren't going for laughs especially. They're told absolutely straight, but that's where the humor comes in.
Yeah.
Like, when there sort of has a ridiculous death and sort of you get the punchline, that makes it funny. But if they're kind of winking at the camera as they do it, it's kind of, that kills it.
That's another thing. I really like that sort of casual humor. I think casual humor is the funniest kind.
Yeah.
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 And that's we'll talk a bit more about Kill 'Em All later, but one of the things I love about Kill 'Em All is that the situation is serious for everyone involved, but when you're reading it, it's also hilarious because they're taking everything so seriously. Do you know what I mean? So those one-liners just, they work even more, you know.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of screenshots I took of your comics as we were going through it, and I was just screenshotting and sending it to the lads just because it was making me chuckle so much. Yeah. What was the one about guns are for wars and pussies? That made me laugh.
Yeah, in terms
of go fuck a polar bear. That was a good one.
Yep.
My favorite is the Mother Teresa one. Handing out.
Both of those jokes come back around too. Both of those jokes you said, they come back around later.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah, they do. Especially the when Winey's got an eye patch on, for those that haven't read it. We won't spoil it, but yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yep.
Well, I think at some point after he kills the Stallone character with the gun, he says something. I mean, I wrote that book a long time ago, but he says something like, well, I guess it's war now, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Do you just have like a massive notebook of one-liners and just things that pop into your head as you're watching films?
But, I don't want to make anyone mad, but I pretty much make everything up as I go along.
Oh.
Like I have the story structure and I have the beats of the story, and occasionally I have something that's like, oh, this is for that. But mostly I get to it and I go, oh, and here they say something, and then I go, well, is it, what do they say? And I go, it's this. Or maybe I go, oh, no, it's not that. It's this. And then I'm very happy. And like it's something I can do, apparently. I hope I get to do it. I didn't think that that line in Rocky Indy Mountain was going to be my new "You brought me to a U fight," which is everyone's favorite line from Jack Castle. There you are. Like I just do what feels right, and it turns out more often than not, people are super amused by it. So it's working out pretty good for me.
I mean, I see your style changing a bit as well, Kyle. I can see from Sex Castle through to the current book, Rock Candy Mountain. It's you've developed in a different way. Do you think?
What do you mean? Like how so?
Well, there's more detail. I would say there's probably more detail in Rock Candy.
Yeah, I tried a lot harder on Rock Candy Mountain. That's for sure. for the other two books, you know, like it wasn't my living, and I knew the number of people that were going to see it was limited. I think Sex Castle, physical sales, I mean, we just wanted to reprint. So for just image, it was 5,000 copies, right? But for the number one, for Rock Candy Mountain, it was over 11,000. So, you know, those are the things that are sort of taken into account. Yeah, I'm trying a lot harder. I would like to not try quite as hard. but the thing is, like, once you start doing it, then you do it, and it's just a part of it. And I think you can even see, even like from issue 1 to 4, like just background stuff, you can see like I tried a lot harder. I'm just trying harder.
Also, from a plot point of view, I'm not saying Sex Castle is undercrate, because it's not. It moves along at a real pace, but there's much more of a sort of universe and a backstory and other characters in Rock Candy Mountain, are there?
Yeah, for sure. But I think, you know, every book you want to try something, you want to try to do something that you couldn't do before.
Okay.
When I did Sex Castle, I knew I could only do a single character story. I wasn't smart enough. I don't know if I am now. When I did Kill Them All, I wanted to do a buddy comedy. I wanted to do a buddy comedy really bad, but I also wanted to do the John Woo thing where the bad guy teams up with the good guy. I wanted to do that a lot too, because I was so into it. So it's like, oh, well, now I went from one character to three characters. Rock Candy Mountain is me very much wanting to do like a traveling buddy comedy. That's also a hobo kung fu epic. that was part of it.
Like, not another one.
Not another one of those things. Because like, you know, Sex Castle is like one man's story, and in many ways, Kill Them All is two disparate people's stories, which is Uraku and the female protagonist who doesn't have just one name. She's like 32. But there's a thing I really like about Kill Them All that I did that it's secret to the ooh, a secret. Because I like to put things in the background. It's real important to me to have, there's the story, and then there's the other story that you have to try harder to get, which is the hardest part of me writing my stuff. But for Rock Candy Mountain, I felt like I didn't nail the sort of friendship that I wanted, the sort of emotional connections I wanted in Kill Them All, and I'm really trying to effort in Rock Candy Mountain. And again, I don't know, I'm hoping by the end, I landed it this time better than I did before. Which was the friendship between Jackson and Pomona. So, I mean, you try something that is going to be an ensemble cast, so that should be good. I don't know. Hopefully it's good.
So you've got to stretch those muscles, haven't you? You've got to stretch it a bit, haven't you, sometimes? Yeah. It's worth pushing it. It just sort of takes a bit more of a plan out, I suppose, does it? Or
yeah, I think this next thing is going to be, planning-wise, the most difficult one I've done. Just because there's... The thing that I really like with a good ensemble cast is how they interact with each other. Less than look at all these cool characters. It's how I know that it's polarizing, but honestly, the best thing about Firefly is how the characters bounce off each other conversationally, and they all clearly in every moment have emotional bonds to each other that are different for every single person. I mean, I don't know what your average person really loves about Firefly, but that's what I love is that. The way those characters are written against each other is amazing, and that's what I'd like to do. That's what I want to do. I want to do a thing where there's a group of people who have very much real and different relationships with each other, and are always. Because like when you write things, it's really easy to be like Joe talks to Dave, but you know, Bob is standing in the room, and when has Bob ever been quiet? Like in real life, there's never a third person who's quietly standing there. Yeah. So I'm really interested in that, and also how to do that with a million word balloons. So yeah, that's next. Like, I think you always try to find the thing. Like I said, you want to make the thing exists in the world that you think should exist. And I have a story I want to tell that I'm really excited. A couple stories. I'm hoping with 2018, I'm getting another 3 or 4 books out, along with doing Rick and Morty every week, and probably, hopefully, another series of Dead of Winter. I could do a book like Sex Castle in my sleep at this point. If you just want to do a tough guy going through X and being tough, okay, cool, yeah. Let's do it. I think right now, as I'm having these opportunities to do what I'd like, and I want to keep doing the thing that I've done, which is to make slightly funny, like amusing, entertaining books that are a little bit different than everybody else's, hopefully a little bit different.
Yeah. It's interesting what you're saying about that ensemble thing and about having them all play off and like them being in the same room at the same time and not saying anything, stuff like that. I read something a few years ago about a lot of American TV succeeds because it represents a false family environment. Does that make sense? So you've got even stuff like Buffy, certainly Firefly and Serenity and stuff like The Next Generation and, you know, all this sort of thing, and Babylon 5, they all represent an ensemble group where you've got like a head figure, a female figure, a rebellious child figure, you know, you've got an estranged family member, you know, it's all this sort of thing. And because you've got that interplay, and you can see that Serenity does that really well, you know, there's a father figure and a mother figure, isn't there? And then it's an interesting theory, and that's why people warm to a lot of these ensemble programs and ensemble comics, I think, you know. That's why, certainly why the X-Men was very successful, because it gave this sort of false family, didn't it, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah, very.
So,
good ad.
So, for what was the journey from Sex Castle to Rock Candy Mountain then?
Yeah.
You're just making this shit up as you go along, aren't you?
So, Kill Them All was Boom, wasn't it? Carl, is that right?
No, Kill Them All was Oni, but it was actually the third book I did. I kickstarted it. I actually kickstarted Kill Them All the moment I found out I was losing my job. I finished that book. This is a really, for people making comics, again, I'm sorry. I did the last 74 pages of Kill Them All in 1 day, in 1 month, 30 days. Because I had to kickstart it because I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have any money, so I had to get it done.
Right.
So I was finishing Kill Them All for when I self-published it. Actually, it was done. I didn't publish it till later because of stuff that's neither here nor there. And I started doing Rick and Morty, which I've been doing now for a year and a half plus, and I'm going to be doing it, as far as I know, forever, or until they tell me to stop, which hopefully they don't. So I've been doing a monthly, and I kickstarted Kill Them All, and then immediately we had a publisher for that, which is Oni, who I like. Oni does Dead of Winter also, and Rick and Morty, so they've been really good to me. I was ready to do my next thing. And what I found from those other three books, Legend of Ricky Thunder, which is mine, it's self-published. I have like 2 boxes of it left. It'll probably be the end of it. And Sex Addict and Kill Them All is that I don't think you can go straight to trade in America. For whatever reason, it just doesn't work. You're going to make significantly less money. So I knew I had to go to monthly. I prefer the OGN. I prefer it as a way to tell story.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you have to figure out how to stop 22 every X number of pages.
Yeah.
Make it interesting enough that people want to read the next one. And I think it's more like television, right? And I watch so much television. But it's like, I'd rather watch a movie than television. That's just how I like to consume things.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I knew I had to do it. Image was super kind to let me do this hobo book, this weird book. I think by the time I'm done with Rock Candy Mountain, it will be as good as Sex Castle. I think I'll be as proud of it as I am Sex Castle. Because I think Sex Castle is going to be something that I'm always going to be associated with.
Yeah.
And I'm always proud to sell. Because I think, to me, I look at that book and I don't see any flaws. And as a creator, that's difficult to make that you don't see any problems with. And stand. I suspect in a couple of years, I'll be like, man, the art's so bad. But story-wise and character-wise, everything came together. I just adore that book, and you know that book got me everything. It got me Rick and Morty. We're working on yet another option for one of my projects, and like that's because of Sex Castle.
Right.
Rock Candy Mountain's because of Sex Castle. Everything's because of Sex Castle, and I think by the end, I think Rock Candy Mountain's going to be a book that's as good. That will hopefully very slowly become as popular as Sex Castle has been. at least like in sort of a cult way.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's got a sort of different kind of feel to it. It's got a sort of historical depth to it, if you get what I'm saying. I know it's not. I know it's sort of it's crazy and out there, but it's got that sort of nostalgia feel to it. I don't know. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I think my hope was is that seeing sort of the things that are in superhero comics in a different environment would be very attractive to people. Because it's basically a good guy fighting a bad guy, in this case, not very subtle. It's the literal devil. Over, it's like there's fights and jokes in every issue, and I thought America was sort of ready to have, you know, non-superhero comics because we like to talk about it all the time. But as it turns out, maybe not so much. Not hobo stuff, which is too bad, because I think especially here in America, it's sort of an overlooked community and history that I could talk about at length, but we don't have to. But I thought it, when I did it, I just wanted an archetype. Ninja, cowboy, pirate, and I was like, those are tired. I don't want to do pirates. No thank you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to do a hobo book. And I started researching hobos, and I became just fascinated with them.
That's something I wanted to ask you about, Carl, because I listened to an interview you did recently, and I think the interviewer said, who do you hear in your head when when you're writing Jackson out? And he had said Carl Urban, and I think you said Lee Marvin. Now, is that because of Emperor of the North? Is that because of that movie?
I think it's just that doesn't hurt, and maybe, but also, like, the thing with Jackson is he's sort of a stoic, intense.
Yeah.
Lee Marvin, to me, is all of those things.
Yeah.
And I always sort of try to, Pomona's Clark Gable, technically, from, for God's sakes, Kyle, To Kill a Mockingbird. It's Clark Gable I hope that's right. I might have said the wrong thing, but whoever's in To Kill a Mockingbird. Whoever's in To Kill a Mockingbird, that's who it is.
it's not Clark Gable, is it? I'm blanking on who it was, but,
Gregory Peck.
I'm going to look.
Gregory Peck.
Yeah. Gregory Peck. Yeah, sorry. It's Gregory Peck. You're 100% right. It's Gregory Peck. Sorry. The Clark Gable was in the discussion at one point in time. I always try to base my dudes off somebody. Because to me, it's easier to sort of imagine them moving around. That's not true for anyone in the background. It's probably not true. But I sort of, it's just easier for me. And also, I'm really, really bad at the, hey, who would you cast as so-and-so? Someone on a site, and I feel bad and I can't remember what site did a casting for Rock Candy Mountain, which is super great, is all these modern, like, contemporary actors and actresses. I have a 10-year-old. I haven't been in the movies in 10 years, guys. I don't know who's cool anymore. So, like, you know, for Kill Them All, I was like, who would be a great 90s bad guy that was never a bad guy? It's Jeff Goldblum, my dude. Jeff Goldblum as a slimy, like, Eurotrash bad guy is the best idea I've ever had. I don't do it as a rule, but I think it's always helpful. And I worked in a movie store for a million years, so I always sort of think about those guys. Also, they're not like immediately recognizable.
He does play a bad guy. And what's that, Charles Bronson? He did 5 of them.
Death Wish. He did a couple times.
Death Wish. He's a baddie in the first one, isn't he? Goldblum. He's one of the guys who breaks into the house.
He's one of the rapists.
Oh, okay. He actually did a full bad guy role in something too, but I can't remember.
He did Deep Cover. Do you remember that one?
Oh yes, yeah, he was in that, wasn't he?
Lawrence Fishburne.
He's great in that.
That sounds exactly right. Yeah, yeah. And I never saw that one, but like he rarely plays a bad guy. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, Deep Cover, totally. But anyway, I'm sure that had an influence. Have you seen Emperor of the North by any chance?
I have, yeah. Ernest Borgnine, Lee Marvin. It's a great movie. An incredibly
At the beginning of the movie, he beats up some other hobos with a chicken, with a live chicken.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I love it so much. And you know what? That was like, whenever that was filmed, you can almost guarantee he beat them up with a live chicken, which is sort of awful. But it's fascinating to see.
Yeah. Well, I know that we've heard a bit more about that period. I'm going to say there's been a couple of documentaries. I think there's one called Riding the Rails, which I saw a bit of about a year ago, I suppose.
I think it was PBS.
Right. And there's also C6 Steve, who's quite well known over here. I don't know how known he is over with you. Is he a big thing over there?
What is it?
C6 Steve, who's a blues guy, who apparently wrote... Yeah. Yeah, he rode the rails for a few years. He sings a lot about it. But
I don't know the guy, but I'll check it out though.
Yeah, very good he is, yeah. But I know that you use a lot of the language you use in it. I take it that's all genuine and that's research because you use a lot of the slang that they use at the time, didn't you?
I think I try not to use that much of it because I think it'll pull you out, but I like to throw stuff in there. And generally, it's something they said. Supposedly.
Yeah.
I love the dialogue that the devil has, especially
devil's brilliant in this.
Especially when he he does this huge leap into a field and just sort of says magic jump.
That fight in the corn is one of my favourite scenes in the whole series.
Yeah.
Where he just pulls a cob of corn off and starts looking at it in the middle of it. Yeah,
yeah,
brilliant.
What do you do with it? What do you do with this?
Yeah, exactly.
Are they eat it or there's a secondary bit to that. I don't know if you guys know, but corn cobs have been used for toilet paper in a lot of places. So an ear of corn is a weird ass thing. So imagine if you weren't from this planet and didn't eat. It's just like the thing about the devil is like he hates it all. I always like to have a character in Rock Candy Mountain. There's sort of two, but I always like to have one character that sort of realizes how ridiculous everything is.
Yeah.
Or it's sort of always commenting on how ridiculous it is. And for Pomona, it's very much like sort of the hobo everything. And because exposition's terrible and it's easier for someone to be like, what's that? But the devil's the same. Like he hates it here. And so he's constantly perplexed by just little things like what is an ear of corn or like why are people being nice to each other? Just little things like that, which I like about him a lot. He does it in a very, very shitty way.
He's also responsible for one of my favourite panels I've seen in a comic recently, is when he kicks someone in the crotch so hard that they literally just explode.
Yeah, I'm real proud of that.
Oh.
So is my mother. My mother wears it. My mother's real proud of it too.
I was about to say. Yeah. Do you? I mean, I'll take you, married guy. Do you show this to your family? Do you say, look at this?
Well, my children. My children do not get to see a single thing I've written ever. Of course, my wife has zero interest. She read Sex Castle for sure. I think she read the first issue of Rock Candy Mountain. Maybe she has no interest. And I know, like, we have Rick and Morty calls more often than anything else, and it's a lot of me going, "Mr. Poopy, ooh, Poopy Butthole this, Poopy Butthole that." And imagine just like having to be in a room with someone saying like all this ridiculous garbage. No, she's not looking at all this. But like that Sex Castle is dedicated to my dad. This is like sort of my bit, right? I dedicate my dad. If you could imagine someone giving fewer fucks about something so nice being done for them, that was it. So now I just dedicate everything to my wife and children because like my wife, though she doesn't read anything, really likes to get the call out. She really likes to have it made specifically for her, even though she doesn't read them. No, and she came back. My wife goes, "When are you going to do something?" She said, "This was this year." She's like, "When are you going to do something the kids can read?" I'm like, "Well, when it pays."
Yeah,
very true.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I have a younger person story I really want to tell, but it's like it's not time yet. And eventually, I'll reach that point where it's like, "Well, now I'm going to do that thing, and it'll be great," because I've sat on it for so long. But these are the stories I like to tell right now, and they're the ones that are bringing me the most enjoyment. I love everything about Rock Candy Mountain. I'm actually finishing up the last issue now, and it's exactly the length of story I had planned. Brilliant. I could have done two more issues if I would have liked to, but I came in saying I'd like to do X number of issues. And of course, you can't.
Is it eight issues? Is it in total? Eight. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's going to be almost exactly the same length as Sex Castle, though I'd have to get a calculator out and see. Exactly what I do from beginning, middle, end. Which I think is a gift in this era of comics, but also I sort of planned for it. But in the end, I got to tell the whole story I wanted to tell, and I'm finishing up now. And man, I sort of wish like it became a thing a little bit, right? Like I wish I could have done 20 issues.
Yeah.
But I don't know what those other 12 issues are. So I'm glad
you're gonna come back to it, can't you? You know,
sales will decide. I suspect just like Sex. I mean, Sex Castle. If when they did that first printing of Sex Castle, like we sold out in 2 weeks, and then we sold out again in a month of the next however many they printed, I'd be like, well, might have to think about that sequel, right, boys? But at this point, you know, I never did that book planning to do a sequel. The only reason why I even think about it is because it's a bad 80s action movie, and bad 80s action movies always have even worse sequels. But it's like, you know, theoretically, this movie, the Sex Castle movie, is on the brink of happening. And if it happens, I don't think I would do another one at this point, because I feel like, well, that the time for that book to be authentically popular passed.
I think they should have done that with Kingsman. I saw Kingsman 2 this week. It's fucking awful.
Oh, was it?
Oh, my God.
They made a sequel to it, though, and it's different.
Yeah, I've seen the sequel, yeah. That's what I saw this week. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently it's the same thing. They had no intention of ever making a sequel, but then sort of both at the same time. Well, the movie people probably did.
Yeah.
But the writer, like, let's just do another one. Like, let's fuck it out. Let's just poop it out, right?
Yeah.
And they did. Good for them. Good for them. Yeah. And that'll probably be the third movie, right? Whatever that is, will be the third movie.
Didn't they do like the thing where a character obviously dies, and then in the second film, it was just kind of a minor wound.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets shot through the eye, and it goes out the back of his head. But they managed to fix it. Yeah.
Well, they got there just in time.
Yeah. They didn't implant any firearms in it. Yeah. Oh, teaser.
Yeah.
No, they should have, like, they should have that character, like, not be able to use, like, S's and H's together for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Suddenly he can't play the piano anymore. Yeah. That'd be the whole thing.
Yeah. His left arm does something, right? Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something subtle but terrible has befallen him.
I'd like to say I found out what happened to him, but I walked out of the cinema because I was so bored.
Did you actually walk out of the cinema?
Yeah, it's just
Tony,
boring.
you will sit down through some...
I watched Puppet Master 3 this weekend, but I would not stay and watch that.
You watched No Retreat, No Surrender 2, and I can recall that.
I'm going to tell you, my colorist on Rocky Mountain loves No Retreat, No Surrender. That's the one where the ghost of Bruce Lee teaches someone martial arts, right?
Yeah.
Fuck yes.
That's the one. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He's like, Kyle, have you seen this? I'm like, no. He's like, you have to watch it.
Yeah,
guys,
I watched
it
this weekend.
That's a terrible movie.
Yeah, and that's down to you, Kyle, that I watched that. That's completely your fault.
I would recommend something else. Have you seen Blind Fury?
Yes,
I recognize
Blind Fury.
All right.
Rocker Howard rules. Yeah. But I actually think No Retreat, No Surrender is this as if Troma made The Karate Kid. That's how I see it.
Which is not a bad thing. You say that, but that's not a bad dub, though, right?
I'll send you that. It's a horrible film. Yeah.
GIF when he's doing that, like, the sit-up thing with the other guy sitting on his lap and he's eating ice creams.
Now, I don't know whether... I looked that geezer up after you sent me that, Dan, because you sent me that GIF of him doing, like... So he's almost like he's... between two bars and he's sitting on his chest eating a burger or something, isn't it?
He's licking ice creams
ice
and
cream,
sitting there in his crotch.
Yeah.
And I was like, who thought this was a great idea?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
That, yeah. Hey, FYI, maybe. That that Burt Reynolds movie that's very similar to Roadhouse is called Malone, which I would have said.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Malone, it's very good. It's very good.
If you like Burt Reynolds movies. I like them. Yeah.
Fall
yeah.
Down. It's one of the ones where he's actually like, it's before he realized the power of his smirk.
Yes.
Yeah. Like doing like weird look at the camera the whole time. He's just like acting. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's generally the one I generally, if people are like, what are the off the beat, like off the path 80s action movies? I know I segued real hard, but I just Googled it. So, is Malone is a good one. Blind Fury is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And, Jim Cotta is like the 80s action movie, like too many people have not seen.
Oh,
yeah. Gotta see Jim Cotta.
I've never seen Jim Cotta.
Unlike No Retreat, No Surrender, which is a difficult and awful thing to sit through. Jim Cotta is so bonkers and perplexing that you get all the way through it. Suddenly it's over and you're like, oh, what happened?
Well, I Googled No Retreat, No Surrender as I'm watching it, because it's the curse of the internet now, isn't it? You want to know all the trivia while you're watching a movie. And I've got a feeling that kid, the black kid, isn't black. Is that right?
You're joking.
In real life?
Really?
What?
Yeah, I think that might be
the RJ character.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that might be made.
But he does so much breakdancing. He has to.
Yeah.
He has
to. I mean, there's
the first
a terrible
scene him,
breakdance scene in it.
He's literally bouncing a basketball.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God. It's...
there's a terrible scene which is straight out of Breakdance 2 Electric Boogaloo, where they, of course, encounter the only two black people in the town who do body popping in the local disco to clearly no music because everyone's talking in the background. It's just... I mean, I love Troma movies, but it's that bad. Do you know what I mean?
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. He's a bit more convincing than the kid out of Karate Kid, though, that he can actually do karate.
Did read up that the Van Damme said to the lead guy, he said that they're going to be doing a sequel to this. Don't be doing it. Don't do it. But then yeah. that actor never didn't go on to anything else.
He didn't, did he? Away. Yeah, you barely see him in anything else. Yeah, yeah.
Are you saying that Jean-Claude Van Damme pretty much killed that guy's career? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, that movie is not good. Does not help anything. Jean-Claude Van Damme is like a weird supporting character in that too.
Yeah, yeah. He was a Russian again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's a story that Jean-Claude replaced somebody in that movie. But I don't remember all. I don't remember any of it. You know why? Because that movie was garbage, and I don't need to remember anything about it. the things I do remember make me angry, because I could have like something useful, like the names of all the states, some sort of the last
eight
presidents.
Bollocks, haven't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I watched Game of Death 2, which is also fucking terrible. And there's a character in that called James Herron, who's a sort of little known martial artist who made his name, and he's in No Retreat, No Surrender 2 in this like 5 minute scene. It's just fucking bizarre. Yeah.
They call him, what do you say his name was? John?
Is it James Herron or something like that?
Now they call him James Number 2 Herron because he's always in the second movies.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Who's the female martial artist that's in No Retreat, No Surrender?
Cynthia Rothrock's in the second movie.
Cynthia Rothrock's a delight, though.
Yeah, she's good in it. Yeah, yeah. She manages to have this whole conversation whilst flying a helicopter, and she sort of turns around and talks to them. And, it's okay.
Cynthia Rothrock should be at all these conventions. Like, every single one, Cynthia Rothrock should be there.
She'd be.
She was the only female kind of star at the time, like, doing the kind of the action and the martial arts.
And I believe she was... Because here in the U.S., she wasn't. No one gave a shit. Like, but I think overseas she did very, very well. But no one cared.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Certainly in the U.K., like when it was VHS, the China O'Brien movies were massive.
Yeah,
in the VHS store.
I watched bits of them over and over. I'll
I bet
be
you did.
You
wore out the
switch bits, brother. Yeah, I know how it is.
She was also in that one, Undefeatable. That's got that. It's commonly cited like the worst fight sequence when those two dudes at the end. Like,
oh my gosh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. I know that one. There's that one which I don't know which movie it is, because like I said, she wasn't. I've watched a bunch, but I couldn't tell you what was what. Where they're fighting on the God damn it! When you're doing construction on a building and there's sort of the catwalks around it.
Yeah.
The scaffolding. Yeah. They're doing that fight on the scaffolding. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is that her and another woman?
Yeah. Turn it out, and it's unbelievable. And I believe that other woman, whose name escapes me, is also like one of the number one female action leads of all time. And
she's got a triple nunchuck type thing at one point. Yeah. I've seen that. That's a great scene.
Happened a year ago. I can tell you the name of that, but I can't tell you now. My segue from that is that I also really wanted a female action lead and killed them all. That was really important to me because there's not traditionally a movie where it's like, oh, well, that's a female lead, that's an action movie, especially from the 80s, 90s. They tried a few times, but and I really wanted to have a female lead badly in an action movie, and I did it.
Yeah, it worked in Hong Kong cinema a little bit here and there, didn't it? But not really.
Female wrestling works over there, too, like, but here, especially in America, like, that stuff doesn't, stuff doesn't fly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
because I'm sure Rothrock did a couple of films over there. I'm not sure if she had started the career over there and then came over to the West.
I think she did some Shaw Brothers movies, didn't she? I've got a feeling.
There's definitely one she did with, it was either Michelle Yao or, what was that other actress?
She did one with Chow Yun Fat, not Chow Yun Fat, who's Jackie Chan's fat mate?
Sammo Hung. Chungking Express or something like that. This one where the train goes through and there's all these kind of different robbers trying to fight, and she's one of the U.S. soldiers fighting them.
Two, right? They have two female leads in it. Am I wrong?
It did. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's Michiko Nishiwaki. She's the lady with the sword, and she's kind of fighting all these ninjas in it. And
I haven't seen that. Right. That sounds good.
That was one that Tarantino like bought the rights to because he loves it so much. It's one of his favorite movies.
That's right.
Because it was re-released in the 90s thanks specifically to Quentin Tarantino. In America, we had, like, when Chow Yun Fat came to America, and we're going to put him in an action movie with a hottie, and, like, we're going to put Mira Sorvino in it, and, like, that doesn't work, guys.
Oh, what, the replacement killers?
Yeah.
That's not, like, Mira Sorvino went from being in a couple of Woody Allen movies to being in a just didn't work out so much.
She just sort of made some dodgy passports, didn't she, and fired a gun a couple of times. That was a role in that one,
And if you watch that film, I don't know, just after watching Hard Boiled,
It's, oh, no. Oh, I did, too. I guarantee you. I guarantee you. I was like, I'm gonna watch Hard Target. I'm going to watch Hard Boiled. I'm going to watch The Killer. Oh, please, sign me up for The Killer. We'll do Face Off. We'll do maybe Broken Arrow.
Yeah.
And then Replacement Killers, you might be like, all right, well, that wasn't the worst. Because you got Replacement, you got Broken Arrow in there first.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm surprised Chaggy and Fat had a career. I mean, honestly, like, it was such a goof. That's, what else? Did he do, Training Day. Directed by the guy who did Training Day. Isn't that the craziest show?
Yeah.
What was that one he did with...
executive producer on Training Day.
What was the one where he was the monk and he had all the secret...
Bulletproof monk.
Bulletproof monk.
That's fucking
awful.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
That is bad. Yeah. That is not a good one. Poor Chatty and Fat. So good. Yeah. So he's... I based Uruka off of him and for them all, obviously.
Yeah. He's literally one of the coolest people on the planet, I think.
Has to be.
Yeah.
It's a shame that the film roles he got in the West really didn't kind of play on his kind of screen persona. And
it's really terrible. But luckily, he was like, I'm just going to leave and go back home.
Yeah. Of course. Because I've seen stuff like in A Better Tomorrow and then, like you said, The Killer and Hard Boiled. So this is fucking great. And then you pick up the Western ones.
Those three movies, and then imagine if that was like that's like the J.D. Salinger of movies, right? If you just did those three movies.
Yeah.
Like, I only did three movies. Well, what were they? Better Tomorrow, Hard Boiled, and The Killers. Like, so basically you had a perfect career. Like,
Yeah.
And then he did Crouching Tiger, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot. I'm looking at his IMDb right now. There's probably a bunch of real bad movies on it. I love that he played a character named Tequila. Can you imagine?
Oh, it's just coolest. Yeah. That character is
such... Yeah,
when his leg's on fire and like a baby wets itself and puts it out, it's just so good. I haven't watched that film in years.
that second half of Hard Boiled, when they're doing the storming the castle is what I call it. When they're doing the sort of storming the castle sequence for the entire second half of that movie, that ends with Chow Yun Fat literally throwing babies out windows.
Yeah,
I was watching that again. I had another book. Which I have a book that's half done. I've been sitting on for now 2 years. But I hadn't seen all these early John Woo movies in so long, and I was like, no, that's what I want to do. I want to do a book that's just the part where people fight their way through a building
and throw babies out of windows. So
I felt like the third, it was so on the nose Stark style that I didn't need to do that. But I was like, holy shit! Like, how did they make a movie? And I'd seen it before, so I guess like there had to have been some sort of, I mean, subconscious. It's been so long; it'd been 20 years since I'd seen it. I should check the math on that. That might not be right. But I was working at a video store. I was working at a video store when it came out, and that was a long time. When did Hard Boiled come out? 1992. So yeah,
is it 92? Oh, geez.
Fuck.
Yeah.
It probably didn't come to America until 93 or 94.
Yeah.
Back in those days, it was all video stuff. You had to, unless you had a hookup.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was 20 years ago that I saw that movie. So I'm sure it's some influence. But it's like, man, just that bit where he's holding that baby. And, you know, like, shooting people through those windows, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's a most Kyle Starks, like, moment.
He's singing the lullaby as well, isn't he?
Yeah, because it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, but it's awesome. But also, like, he's the stakes are so high, he has a baby. But also, it's hilarious, he has a baby.
That's no place for a gun. He was thinking of the action figure market at the time, even back then. You know.
Even now, that's become a bit of a trope, hasn't it? Where, like, you got the hero holding a baby. They send it up in their
Trope
of Thunder when they do the Ben Stiller mock
adverts. They do it in Shootout, too.
Yes. I was just thinking that. Yeah, that's a fucking weird film.
It's good, though. Shoot 'em Up came up with my agent. He's like, that one dumb movie. And I'm like, no. The thing about Shoot 'em Up is, like, that's a very difficult movie to market. Because you have to have people understand, like, this movie is literally a satire. I mean, it's maybe not satire, but it's very much that sort of a parody. It's as close as you can get to an homage, but still clearly be sort of making fun of itself.
Yeah, it takes a Tarantino attitude, doesn't it? And it takes it another three or four steps on. You know,
it's clearly a comedy that's played 100% straight, and that's hard to do. But Paul Giamatti is great in that. Everyone's great in that movie.
Yeah. Paul Giamatti is great. Movie, yeah, he's great in it. Is it Maria Bello? Who's the female in it?
Yeah, it's Maria Bello. Monica Bellucci, is she in it?
Is it Bellucci? Okay. Yeah. Who's who did you... Is there any particular sort of characters you base Sex Castle on? Is there any sort of anyone you look to and thought, right, a little bit of this, a little, because there's a little bit of the Snake Plissken in there, isn't there? Or
oh, visually?
Yeah.
All right. So look, I'm not. I shouldn't say, guys. I based that on. I thought when I did Sex Castle, I was like, who do I think would be like the best new like action hero? Like if I had to cast someone to be, who would it be? And I casted the pro wrestler Edge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can see that.
But as it so happens, he looks a lot like Kurt Russell the way I draw him. which is more about my drawing than actually what those guys look like. But generally, people go, "Oh, it's Kurt Russell, right?" And I just go, "Yeah." So what does it matter? Like, it doesn't matter if you think it's. It doesn't make it better or worse. But certainly, like all the stuff with the Assassin's Nine. I can't remember what I call them. It's been a long time. But when the Big Nine show up or whatever, that was the point when I realized like I want to make an action movie. I don't just want to do Roadhouse because originally it was going to come into sort of like a big climax that involved Big E or Big Sur and E and the bus would have sort of been like the big bads for him to deal with.
Yeah.
But I realized like. One, I had no budget, so I can do whatever I want, which is something now is different because I look at a book. It's like, how do you pay for this? Whereas a couple years back, you just keep doing it. You just keep making pages. You never have to stop. It's great. but I realized like there's a bigger, better story that I wanted to tell, and I got to add. Like usually with writing, you know, they say you have to kill your babies, and Sex Castle is an example where I 100% did not have to do that. I had more babies, and it's better because of it. Which for the most part that never ever works out, which is why again I like Sex Castle. To me as a storyteller, I look back and it's just like there's no thread that is left dangling. I got to put everything in that book I want to put into it. There's nothing that I left out. I got to put everything I wanted in that book and I didn't put anything extra. Everything serves a function. It's such a tight book. I'm so proud of it. I endeavor for everything to be the same.
Yeah. So what was that like, though? Because obviously you stuck the landing and you're so pleased with that book. Was it daunting for the next project?
Well, you know, it wasn't. It wasn't until what happened. And I can't remember what I ended up doing. I had a different book. I had a different book I was going to do, which I'm still sitting on, which I'm still going to do.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do it because I would like for the book to come out at a certain time. And So I started on the next book because at the time it was literally me dancing with no one looking. I was just doing whatever I wanted and who cares. And it seems like the very small amount of people who had seen it liked it. So I'm doing pretty good, right? But with Sex Castle coming out from Image, it sort of changed everything. And Matt Fraction was very vocally supportive of me. And I realized there were stakes, and I 100% got the yips, which is, in full disclosure, it's why I did Kill Them All, because it's like, I need to do something I know I won't fuck up.
Right.
Okay. I'm not going to stop making books, and I need to make a book that I know I won't mess up. So I did Kill Them All, but I have, like I said, I have another book that's half done, which is ostensibly Dr. J vs. Dracula. It's very good. But at the time, I was like, this is even weirder. Like, I'm going in an even weirder direction. And since then, Rock Candy Mountain superseded everything because it's 100% the story I wanted to tell at the time. And it's where I stand right now. It's the second story I wanted to tell very badly because I love it. And I'm worried about one element of that book not landing the way I'd like for it to. But I think if I walk away from 200 pages and go, man, I wish that one thing was a little bit better. And there's 100 things in the book, I did pretty good. And I'm going to try again next time. Then the next book, I'm going to try to do it. So.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can see that you've jumped genres a little bit, haven't you? With Rock Candy Mountain, it's a complete. You're almost a bit. Did you feel a bit like a fish out of water with that book?
Not at all.
No,
because I'm not going to attempt to do a story that I don't feel like I'm prepared to do. Also, it's a fight. It's just an action movie. It just has a different skin on. It's literally a superhero movie.
Right. Okay.
I think of things as a full story. That's not the right, but it's a superhero story. Just the difference is instead of wearing a cape and some dumb symbol on his chest, the dude is a hobo and you're on trains instead of in cities. And that's the same for Commando. Commando's a superhero movie, right? I mean,
he walks down the hill with a tree on his shoulder, doesn't he?
You could put Batman suit on him for the second half of that movie and you wouldn't blink an eye. And I think that those are the type of stories, because of how I was raised watching 80s action movies and reading superhero comics. It's like the point where I do a story where there's no fighting in it is the point where I'm going to be like, holy shit, guys. Like, because jokes and action, like joke comedy, light comedy, I don't want to do full. I mean, I guess Rick and Morty is sort of full comedy, but I feel like that's even true for how I do Rick and Morty. But the moment that I do a book that's not funny, though, to be honest with you, the second half of Rock Candy Mountain is not near as funny as the first half. By intention. I think someone, for one of those books, like issue 4, which is when they're in prison, they're
That's to me, that suddenly changed, and I thought, this is really becoming a bit of an epic.
Right. You know? And I think one of the reviewers was like, it's not as funny as the other one. I'm like, man, it doesn't have to be as funny as the other. Like, it's my story. Like, I'm not here to make you guys go, oh man, I hope that, like, I'm trying to think of what's the bit. Oh man, I hope someone starts saying this hobo phrase in common day parlance, and boy, everyone laughs. Like, no man, I'm trying to tell a really good story where characters experience a major interesting thing, and the journey is fascinating and fun. Like, I'm not, if it's funny, good. Like, I'm not trying to do laugh books. I'd be working for Mad Magazine if I wanted to do jokey jokes all day.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, man, issue five is the darkest, most serious, 22 pages or however many it is.
So issue five is where you go back and tell a bit of his history, is that right? Or
issue five is entirely a flashback to Jackson's life.
Right, okay.
His adult life. I don't show no hobo babies. But the book is set 2 years after World War II. Guess what? It's going to be dark, right? I mean, yeah. World War II. To me, it's still fun and it's funny, but the tone is very dark. And really, the tone to the whole book. Like once issue five comes out, my hope is the people who read all five go, wow, this sort of colors the first four issues in a different way. The reason why Jackson does the things, his impetus has changed. The reason why he does things is so, it's so, everything now has layers to it. Yeah. And I wanted, that was one of the things for me, it's like, why would I read an eight issue series? Is that I want a mystery.
Yeah.
I want something that's going to slowly unfold. And optimally, I wouldn't have done it with issue five. I think it would have been like issue six. But I think with the two trade thing, it works out great that you come to the second trade and like, here you go, here's everything, right?
Yeah. Humor is also hugely important for those, you know, the serious and darker moments, isn't it? I think. I mean, all the best comedy shows, normally they have the biggest dramatic moments as well, and the most tragic moments, and you feel it more because I think the humor helps you attach yourself to the characters, doesn't it? Really?
It either sets it up in a way that you're not expecting, or it takes the edge off, which is always good. I like a joke, and I. No matter what. I mean, I think comics are supposed to be fun. And I think they can be fun without being funny, for sure. But for me, it's just like those 80s action movies. I like a good fight. I want a little bit of comedy thrown in. Just always. Always. Even a horror movie. Even a good horror movie has one or two good jokes in it.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. And I couldn't imagine, like, I don't want to do high drama. I want to do things that I can throw at least one or two jokes in and people don't go, well, that was forced. It's like, oh, look, it's so funny. But like I said, the point where I do a book that's neither funny nor has a fight sequence is the point where I'll be out of... Because otherwise, it's like pro wrestling, right? Are you guys pro wrestling fans by any chance? Anyone?
I am.
No?
It's your big fan. These two guys are. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the thing I love about wrestling, which is also the same thing I love about comics, is that superhero comics specifically, is that you're going to tell these stories, but ultimately it has to be resolved with a fight. And in wrestling, it has to be resolved with a fight in one specific location. Like, superheroes the same way, right? Except for it's just like, it's Metropolis or whatever. You're going to fight in a city, or you're going to have a fight on a satellite or on the moon. No matter what, the climax to whatever story it is always ends in a fight. And I think it's fascinating to have those those sort of limitations on your story, but also how hard it forces you to sort of tell the story you want to tell with those in place. And because of that, and I think the same with superhero comics, as I do with wrestling, is when people do it well, it's better than anything. Because they did it with limitations. Like, they overcame so much to tell a great story.
Yeah.
It's just one of the best... I hate to say Watchmen. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Like that's a superhero comic that shines. It overcame being a superhero comic. And in that case, it did so by destroying comic books, but that's neither here nor there. And wrestling's the same. Like, a really good, like, wrestling arc, which has been about... We've been about 10 years out of, by the way. It's been about 10 years. Maybe Shadwin was out. But, like, when they nail it, man... I'm a big Chikara guy, which is an aside. I love Chikara, and I didn't watch for a couple of years, and I started watching basically the next season, because they do a thing on Chikara where each year is a season. So there's a big bad generally, and they tell narratives. They're really big on narrative, which I love. And I watched one I hadn't watched in years, and I was literally clapping, and I forgot that you could like something enough to do those things.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't clap when I watch whatever my favorite TV show is. I maybe go, haha, good one. But it's like, I feel like comics and wrestling have to overcome so much to tell those types of stories.
Yeah.
And so that's part of my fascination. Like, so if I do one that there's zero fights in, I don't know what that story, I couldn't imagine. Then I'd be out of water. Yeah. But until then, it's just, these are the story beats, and you want to tell someone's journey, and it's going to also involve fighting at some point.
Well, all we got to say is don't stop doing what you do, because
definitely
we're all on for the ride. So
awesome, I love it.
Yeah.
Same
so,
book.
Yeah, where can people get the current titles you got out at the moment?
Well, I mean, your local comic store should have them, or be able to order them. Otherwise, Comixology, I guess. I don't know. Wherever you get comics. I mean, you should be able to get all my books at a bookstore, too, but they might not have them, so.
Well, it's not
Rock Candy Mountain has had its first trade out. Has that been out already? Okay.
So last month, September 27th, Volume 1 of Rock Candy Mountain came out from Image Comics. Of course, Image Comics, everyone knows. Kill Them All, which is a near 200-page book. It's what I call a reverse Die Hard. It's very good.
Yeah.
Which is my brother John Woo Movies came out. That's from Oni Press. They did a great job on coloring it and putting a really great. It's got French flaps on the book. They love it.
Oh lovely.
Very fancy.
Yeah.
Very fancy. Very fancy. Sex Castle just got reprinted slightly larger, which I'm very excited about. We're also supposedly. I just renewed my option for the second time. There's a script. Supposedly, the Russo brothers are very
nice.
Go ahead and buy Sex Castle now, so you can be cool. So when it comes out in 6 months, you'll be like, I already have that. I know about it. Castle, Rock Candy Mountain, Kill Them All. Dead of Winter is coming out next month. It's a 4-issue miniseries. It's about a dog named Sparky fighting zombies. It's very good. It's about a dog fighting zombies. That should be an easy sell. And do Rick and Morty literally every month. I'm the Rick and Morty writer and occasional artist. I've been on it since 16. We're on 30. I think 31 comes out this week.
Have you worked with Sarah Grayley at all on that?
I know Sarah Grayley very well. I just saw her in New York, actually.
I saw her too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I debuted on Rick and Morty at San Diego last year, and she was a guest of Oni at that show for a Little Poopy Superstar. So we did a signing, like right next to each other.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we know Sarah. I saw her in New York, and then we saw her at Nottingham last month as well. Yeah.
I think she's someplace else this weekend.
Sorry, mate.
I think she's someplace this weekend too.
I think she is. Yeah, I've seen her online at something. Yeah. Yeah, she's got a big fan base. Very, very, very fond of the people.
Which is wild. That good for her too. Like,
yeah, definitely.
She's full timing it. She's so delightful. They're both. Her and Steph are so charming.
Yeah, they are.
Likeable.
Yeah.
You couldn't wish for it. It's funny. I actually got to have dinner with them this time, which was nice. For them, Mark Ellerby. Do you guys know Mark Ellerby?
Yeah.
He does. He is now the full-time artist, the lead artist on Rick and Morty. I think I just got pencils for the last issue, and they're so tremendous.
Cool.
I as a rule, sort of don't like collaborating. Because I know how I would do it, and you have to sort of up. With Mark, he will not do what I say in the script. He will do it the words, but not the thing I thought, and it's always better. And to say that, I feel like it's the highest compliment you could give somebody. And also, I want to do Thought Bubble. I want to do Thought Bubble so bad.
Next question was going to be, Thought Bubble.
They're listening. God, bring your boy out. He wants to come out so bad. I want to meet John Allison, who I consider a friend and I think is literally brilliant. So bad. I want to do Thought Bubble. Thought Bubble needs to bring your boy Kyle Starks out this year.
Yeah, that's the big UK one now at the moment. Yeah, I had an absolute brilliant time this year. I don't know if you've heard, but it's changed venue a little bit, and it's all sort of switched around, but it's really working well. Yeah, brilliant stuff it was this year.
Yeah.
Really good fun. Yeah. You'll need a new liver as well, Carl. You need to bring a separate liver with you in case you come as well.
Why's that? Is there a lot of drinking?
It's a big drinking con, that is. Yeah,
you know what? I'm diabetic, so I can't drink.
Oh.
Which is good, guys, because guess what? I used to kind of be an alcoholic. So it's kind of just God's way of being like, it's kind of God's way of being maybe stop doing that one thing and maybe start eating more cucumbers, apparently. That's what happens. Sucks.
Well, you never know. This time next year, he might be at Thought Bubble.
Yeah, let's.
I hope so. I want to do. That's this year I'm doing Emerald City, which is in Seattle. Which when I started, I was told was it was like Heroes of the West. Heroes kind of the West. So I wanted to, like, that's the show I want to do. It's the last show in America that I wanted. I just want to do that I haven't got to do yet, and they're bringing me out as a guest. Thought Bubble is literally like I want to do what it's everything's like a step. Like I see my career just like oh. When I first started and I found out people didn't have to pay for tables at conventions, I was like, what? I don't want to pay for tables. Well, I don't pay for tables anymore, guys. Like, if I pay for a table, I'm not doing that show. And then it's like, hold on. Some people didn't have to pay for their hotel either. What?
And Yeah,
I've been super lucky to, like, do a handful of shows, especially regional shows. They put me up. It's all profit. It's great. And then I was like, what? Some people get flown out? I'm getting flown out to Emerald City. It's like, I feel like it's like the dream keeps getting bigger. So at this point in my career, I want to do Thought Bubble. I want to do Thought Bubble as a guest. Very bad one.
Yeah. You got to ride that Rick and Morty power note, didn't you?
Yep. I'm glad to, frankly, because I think it's a great franchise.
Yeah.
And I know the internet has been problematic for it, but my experience, which is I did 26 appearances this year, 26.
Right.
Never had a bad experience with a fan of that show, not once. They're all delightful people who just love that show. I've never had anything problematic said in my presence. So the internet sort of, I feel like, is not a depiction of the fan base.
Well, the internet is a tire fire anyway, at the best of times.
So. Exactly right. So I know there's a lot of like, oh, well, it's like, you know, I've never had a bad experience. And I love it. I love the franchise. I love working with Oni. Oni's got a really good team on it, and I'm glad to write it out, frankly. That's why, I got to go to New York gratis. The only reason why is because of Rick and Morty.
Did you have a table there, Carl? Did you? I must have missed you, mate. I didn't. It was so packed every time I went around. Whereabouts were you?
Insane. I was on the side of the room that Sarah Grayley was in. I was at the first aisle at the front. I was like C19 or something like that. I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah.
I was not sitting near anyone of real note.
Was that the Heroes Initiative side? There was they had like a long table on the far side.
No, that was the same aisle Sarah was in, I think.
Okay, yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I was like, when you walk in, if you took a left and then like an immediate right, I would have been...
Oh, I know. Okay, it's a shame.
It's a bad spot. Yeah. And it was so crowded. It was insane. And I was gone a lot because I did a bunch of signings and blah, blah, blah. that was a crazy show. Was that your first time in New York?
No. I've done them all, actually. I've done all the...
What do you think of New York?
I mean, I love the city. I've historically loved the convention. I just feel it's pushing the comics a little bit to the side this year. That's how I felt about it a little bit.
I felt like with San Diego, people were buying comics, though, so I was kind of for it.
Yeah. Okay.
If they're buying, it doesn't matter, does it, at the end of the day?
No, I don't care. Well, I did San Diego. Like I said, I did San Diego a couple of years ago when I met Sarah Grayley for the first time. And, man, I did not see a person walking around with a comic book.
I said the same about New York this year, you know? Sure. I said exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
I sat in that big, you know, the mess near Artist Alley where all the tables where people are eating and sitting about. I don't think I saw one person reading a comic there, dude, I'm afraid, which is a shame. You know what I mean?
There was a ton of comic book vendors there. I know two vendors that were there that did very, very well. And I found like everyone downstairs, for the most part, did very, very well.
Right. Yeah, I have to say those comic vendors probably did very well because of me, because I spent a shitload. Yeah.
I really like that show. There was too many people at that show. I made so much money, I have to actually decide if I'll do that show again, which sucks, because normally I'd be like, it's a lot of money, but I hated all of it. New York is not as full as it thinks it is. That's what I felt like when I left New York. Yeah. I saw so many people on Razor scooters, my dude.
I
saw 22 people, 22 adults on Razor scooters.
Oh.
You know that? City's not that cool.
Oh dear. Well, thank you for talking to us about all the amazing books, Carl, and the Razor scooters. What a thing to finish our chat off with. But he's sticking around, folks, because he's got a couple of books to recommend.
Yeah.
But what shout outs do we have? Do we have any shout outs this week, gents?
Yeah, I got a couple. Yeah. Shall I go?
Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. The 8th of November between 6 and 7 at Forbidden Planet in Shaftesbury Avenue in London, Mike Sizemore and friend of the show, Dave Kennedy, who always amuses us online, are doing a signing. They're both involved in, Dave's the artist, Mike's the writer, for John Carpenter's Tales of Science Fiction Vortex 1. I love Dave's work. He's a really interesting artist, and he's definitely going places. So pop along that between 6 and 7. I'll be there, and I think
he's
we're
also
going
responsible
for a beer afterwards.
For the funniest Facebook posts. On our
yes, every time we put a message out, he puts one, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's good. He's a good egg. And I've not actually met him face-to-face, so I'm looking forward to that. And then the 11th of November, me and Dan, Dave Broughton, and a host of other people will be at Merton Library for Wimbledon Comics Art Festival. Looking forward to that, Dan, aren't we?
Yeah.
We've got a couple of tables there. That.
Yeah.
And the other thing today, my old mucker, Stuart McCune's The Human Beings issue 4 has... launched today on Kickstarter, and it's already about 100 quid over its amount, but please go and pledge to it because it's a great book, and if you go to the Kickstarter, I'm quoted on it, which is quite nice. So there you go, go and buy it. It's awesome. A great book.
Nice.
That's mine.
I've got a quick shout out for this Friday, 7 o'clock at Orbital. They're doing a Thor themed life drawing class to tie into Ragnarok. I don't know if they have any tickets left, but if you go online to orbitalcomics.com, look at events, and you can see if there's something. I'd really recommend it. It's a good night.
Yeah, and it's bound to go sexual quickly because we always know it does there.
Yeah.
If you two are going to be there, then it probably will. And I've got one tiny shout out, and it's a rare moment of me trying to pimp myself out. You can pre-order the debut novel from myself and my friend Daniel Mark Chant on Amazon now. It's going to be released on Halloween, and it's called Devil Kickers. So it's a horror comedy about a couple of exorcists, and I'm very, very proud of it.
Is it autobiographical?
Partly. I've dealt with some devilish people in my time. And
big
and
sexual content
and kick them. No.
Can we get print copies, Vince, or is it just digital downloads?
The digital release is on Halloween, but the print copies will be out shortly afterwards, and they're the ones that I've done the layout and design for the physical copies.
So look beyond that, then, and it's a good book.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to get the one jab.
Oh, touche. Thank you, Dan. Where would I be? You keep me grounded, don't you?
Yeah.
So I'll put a link in the show notes, but check it out. You may hear a bit more about that book on our Halloween show. So
yes, we've got a good Halloween one coming up.
Yeah,
we've got a great guest for it. Yeah. Funny guy. Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Okay, right. Shall we recommend some comics to folks?
Yes.
Let's do it. Who wants to go first?
Go on, you go first, V. You never go first.
Oh, right, okay. That's a lie. Right, okay. Mine's just a quick one. It's one I picked up from Nottingham that I've been waiting for a long time to talk about and read.
Rock Candy Mountain.
Yay!
Well, of course, you got to get that and Kill 'Em All. Anything by Carl Starks, just pick it up. But this book is Midnight Man, Gunspace.
Yes.
Written by Mo Alley and art by Andy Blore. They co-created. This is their little baby. I will say I'm recommending it, and I'm not quite sure how to describe it, and I know you've read it, Tony.
So. Yeah, I put a review up this week, and it's a difficult one to decide. It's somewhere between a Hawkwind cover and something to do with two-tone ska music, I think. There's a joining there somewhere, you know.
I'll just read the synopsis on the back.
Yeah.
Blasting into space in a retrofitted Big Ben, time-travelling vigilante Midnight Man is off on another exciting adventure. Can he find the origins of the sinister time-corrupting cabal hounding him at every turn, saving humanity once and for all? It's a metaphysical jaunt across the cosmos and beyond. Strange beings and bizarre escapades, and a quest that will ultimately question everything our hero believes in. And that's just...
Nice.
That's just
it's fucking nuts. There's bits where they actually land on an unborn baby sized planet, which is the size of a planet.
A planet which is an actual baby. There's crazy rock creatures. It begins with Midnight Man, the titular hero himself, who's a visually striking character. He's piloting Big Ben,
Now, is he, though? Is he piloting Big Ben? Being a Londoner, I have a problem with this, Mr. Ali, because that is not Big Ben. Big Ben is that is the Elizabeth Tower.
Yeah. Oh,
Big
no.
Ben is the bell inside, as all Ben's good Londoners oh, know. Yeah.
I'm learning so many things.
You're such a nerd, Tony. Such a nerd.
I love it. I love it.
I'm yeah. a bell.
He's got knowledge, my dude. He's got knowledge. Let him share it.
Well, essentially, the building is the spaceship, and
yes.
you know, anyone who knows of that building will know that must be one hell of a mother to draw. And as yeah. always, Mr. Blore knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
He's top. Although he does just seemingly crash the building onto another planet. So it looks like we're not getting Big Ben or the building yeah. encasing it.
If you thought the first book was nuts, this fucking yeah. just goes off on one. Just yeah. like I think that Andy and Mo just got comfortable with each other's writing and drawing and knew that they could go this far with it. And they just push it out to sort of... I think I could refer to them as lysergic gangsters, which I know Mo said, oh, I fucking love that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's just like an acid trip, you know. But in black, but in gorgeous black and white, the way yeah, Andy draws it, it's solid blacks, looks really yeah. good. Yeah.
I was geeking out over the first book because that whatever paper they've got it printed on is absolutely lovely. It's got like a kind of a silk kind of finish, so kind of the greys look slightly metallic when they're under light. Yeah. I was like, I'm loving this.
Yeah,
yeah. I bought some pages off Andy last year. Yeah, yeah.
Andy sells his pages for an absolute song at a convention.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they are, I mean, I've got bits of his artwork, original bits of artwork, and it's absolutely stunning stuff.
Yeah. Dude must go through a lot of blacks.
Yeah.
Heavy yeah. spot blacks.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of pens he probably absolutely murders. But yeah, anyone who's read Midnight Man 1, and I know a lot of the listeners will certainly, they're going to chase this out and pick yeah. it up, and it's
like a Michael Moorcock book. It's like a Jerry yeah. Cornelius fucking nuts thing, and I love that there's people doing that.
This one felt even more 2000 AD sort of flavoured.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah, I think I said that in the review. Actually, yeah. This could easily be. I'd love to see this in 2000 AD. Yeah.
And I like the introduction. Midnight Man, who has like a white mask with a black arrow on it, meets a female character who's pretty much just the mirror, called Lady Noon. Who's a?
I do like that. Their tongue is firmly in their cheek when they gender swap, and it just made me chuckle. I'm sure they know what they're doing there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So it's great stuff. So put out by Bad Mother Publisher, which is what they call themselves. Follow the creators at @Mo_Ali and @AndyBlore, where they shout out where I think it's available on Big Cartel. Have they released it on the Big Cartel yet?
I think they have, yeah, I think so, yeah.
So, check them out and chase them up, because this is, it's just great stuff. And also, the physical copy is just really nicely printed. It's a lovely...
It is. It's Dark Knight Returns kind of format, isn't it? That's with a spine. Yeah, it's a lovely... And it's got a John McCrae print as well.
Oh, yeah, which is lovely.
It's really nice. Yeah.
So there you go. Midnight Man, Gun Space. That's my one.
Which you awesome. Picked up, and you went, her bum space...
I never said such a thing. I'm a grown-up, Tony. What are you talking about?
Kyle, do you want to go for your recommendations?
Yeah. What a recommendation from Kyle Starks. Well, that must be the highest possible recommendation.
Is it bum space?
I got no, but that might be the title of a future book. It sounds too good to pass up on. I have two. Do you want me to do one, or should I do both?
Do them both.
Right. Well, Here's what I'm recommending. One's already out, and one is coming out November 7th. In my opinion, the two best books of 2017. One is from before 2017, but in my opinion, they're the two best books I've read on comic shelves in so long. The first one is Xander Cannon's Kaiju Max from Oni Press. You can get Volume 1 and Volume 2 for $30 altogether. And Volume 1 is great. It's about a prison for... giant monsters, basically the kaiju monsters, if you will, and that sounds like something I wouldn't like, except for that it's hilarious and awesome. And then the second book, which just came out this year, season 2, is somehow better. Like, mathematically it's 3 times better than volume 1, which is impossible and amazing. I think Xander Cannon and John Allison, aforementioned, I think are two guys who are working on just a different level than everybody else right now. Xander Cannon did Heck, which is also a really good book if you haven't read it. My other recommendation, which I just read at New York Comic Con. It comes out November 7th, is Four Kids Walk Into a Bank by Matt Rosenberg.
Oh, yes.
It is one of the best written things I've read. And I say things, I mean things, period. The ending to me feels like maybe not the planned ending, but everything up, it's so tight, it's so perfect. Every character plays off each other. Every character is interesting. He does this sort of setup trick at the beginning of each issue, which is different each issue, but clever every time. It's really good. Matt Rosenberg is now doing a bunch of Marvel stuff. I think he's going to be the next Fraction, Hickman.
Spencer, yeah,
definitely. Yeah, he's so
beautiful. He's going to be the next guy.
Yeah.
I think he's the hottest upcoming. I think him, my hot pick for like better get on board now, guys, are Rosenberg and Daniel Warren Johnson, who I think is going to be the most sought after artist in 2 years, if not sooner. Yeah. But if you didn't read, what was Rosenberg's first book? You Can't Go Home Again? Something like that. It's from Black Mass Studios. It's good. It's very good. And you can see like how smart the writer is. And I bought into Rosenberg when I read that book. This Four Kids Walking to a Bank is a masterstroke. Kaiju Max is so good. If you're not reading Kaiju Max, you can get Volume 1 for $10, and there's no reason not to. It's so good. Both of those guys, and those are the two. There's nothing will beat them. Those are the two best books of the year, no question.
Both of those have been recommended by us on the show in past episodes as well. So we've got the same taste.
Season 2 of Kaiju Max.
Yeah, good stuff. That's the answer. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Four Kids in the Walk, it comes out November 7th, I think.
I was reading that in the issues on Comixology, and like pretty much every time a new issue came out, I've mentioned it on the show. Just check it out because it's just so good. Nick Spencer, his sort of style of writing in like The Fix and Superior Foes of Spider-Man, it felt like Rosenberg like was almost riffing on that. It's like he drunk the same punch, if you know what I mean, and just put it.
Well, they're friends. They're friends, so that probably isn't a coincidence.
Okay.
I would not. Four Kids, they're two different things, I in my opinion. Yeah. Four Kids Walking to the Bank feels like if Tarantino did a comic book, but wanted to not take it that seriously. He wanted it to be funny somehow too. It's so tight. The thing that I saw earlier about characters playing off each other, he does that, and it's a bunch of characters, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how good it is to me.
And it's responsible for my favorite lettering of the year, which is where someone drinks so much Fanta that they throw it up. And as they're puking, the puke sound is actually just Fanta in big font coming out of their mouth.
Very good. Yeah, so those are my two recommendations. You should all just go buy Kaiju Max and pre-order Four Kids now. They're that good.
Nice.
Awesome.
Danny, do you want to go? Dan?
Yeah, sure. This is one you recommended I pick up, Tony.
Okay.
The Valiant, first trade.
This is good.
It's really good. It's kind of like the Valiant supergroup. The nearest thing I could kind of put it up to is like the Avengers. And it kicks off...
It's like an event book, isn't it, almost?
Yeah.
But
it's kind of got... is it Gilad, the Eternal Warrior? And
yes.
Kind of it cuts through these moments in time where he's fighting this kind of Eternal Evil or trying to prep for it. And every time he gets totally and utterly done over, he sort of said, right, we've got this plan to do this. And by the time he turns around, everything he's planned is like laid to waste. And it cuts to like modern day where he's been trying to protect these Geomancer individuals pop up in the time zones.
And it goes that's an ongoing theme throughout his solo book as well, the Geomancer. So he's sort of, that's his sort of job, and he's destined to do it, even though he keeps getting killed and coming back.
Just to protect him.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of modern day, and he realizes the same thing is going to happen. This kind of eternal evil is going to pop up. So he gets the kind of the cast of the Valiant universe to kind of stand with him. And it plays out really well. Like we as we were talking earlier in the show, when you get all the kind of different characters and their relationships to each other, each one of them has got a very distinct personality. It's great seeing them kind of bounce off one another. So you've got the latest Geomancer, like a young girl, and Bloodshot, who's kind of very straight by the numbers, sort of like a military guy. And they're sitting down having a conversation. She says to him, "So you're like a cyborg?" And he responds, "Not really. It's hard to explain." She goes, "Well, you can't explain what you are." He says, "Explain what a Geomancer is." And there's like a kind of pause panel. She's like, "Fine, point taken." It's some really nice little moments between the various characters. And it's really well written, really intelligent written. Art's absolutely fantastic.
Is it Paolo Rivera? Is it the art?
Yes, Paolo Rivera.
does the artwork.
Incredible stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's really great title, and it's one of those ones we can pick up for. See, they do them for £7.
The first volumes of their series, I think, at the moment, if you go into Orbital, I think some of them are £6. I think they've got a sale on anyone.
Honestly, you cannot go wrong. Definitely with this one. I started reading Unity. I haven't finished that yet, but yeah, it was a worthwhile buying. I think I bought five of them.
I would recommend that as like an entry drug to the Valiant universe because it's fairly self-encapsulated.
Yeah.
It introduces you to the characters you need to know for the sort of more adventure, more sort of adult hero side of things because they've got their sort of the faith book. They've got the sort of teenage hero group as well area. You know, but that for this, I think for the stuff I like, this is certainly the best one. And then I would go to Divinity from that. I would say,
you know, buy that, see which characters you like, and then
you
get the other ones from there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Yeah, nice one.
Cool. I've got one which is very brief, which is just an introduction to something that we're going to probably talk about another time. Porcelain Ivory Tower, which is the third book in the Porcelain series.
Oh yes.
Bye. Written by Benjamin Reed, art by Chris Wildgoose. This is the best thing I've read in literally years. I'm full of hyperbole, but if you go to neveruninanything.blogspot.co.uk, you'll see I've done a spoiler-free preview of it. It's just come out. It came out of the lakes, and it is currently only available through the Page 45 website, but will be further available elsewhere, including through improperbooks.com. But I know that I've received it through the post, and I think you two guys haven't received your hard copies yet. Is that right? Or
not yet?
Not yet.
On the way.
Yeah. So when we do, we will give it a full rub down.
rub down.
Yeah. We'll lay on its front and rub its back. But the it's breathtaking. If the first book was sort of Grimm's fairy tales, this book is a Russian epic. With the fantasy element attached to it is incredible. Absolutely incredible. That's what I say. And the one that I'm going to do as a proper review is Psycho Killer, which has just come out as a hard copy. I don't know if you remember it. I know being a toxic reader, Dan, but it was in Toxic Psycho Killer. It's by Pat Mills and Tony Skinner and art by Dave Kendall. It's about Dr. Morbus, who's the titular psycho killer, and he can help you with your demonic infestation. It's got the tagline of "Are you ready for your demonic irrigation?" as I said, it is fucked up. I tell you now, this is probably one of the maddest books you'll read in a long time. There's something that happens when Pat and Tony Skinner get together and write stuff. It just goes off. In just the most unusual way. It's just grotesquely horror, but with Pat's sort of trademark satirical, funny, nasty edge to it, if that makes sense. Yeah. It's on Comixology. I think it's only like £1.50 on Comixology, or you can order the hard copy, which Pat and Millsberg and Pat and Lisa are publishing themselves. It's basically Dr. Morbus is I suppose he's a sort of psychiatrist in the worst mental hospital you've ever been to in your life, and he's got a sort of section of it which is even worse than the main section, and he deals with people who are possessed. But I mean, it's not that sort of cliched Hollywood all possession, all floating above the bed sheets. It's just like things are bleeding out there. Ear holes and
I wonder
demons
what you're gonna say then.
Yeah, I know. I avoided that one. Demons are like crawling, you know, climbing out of mouths, and Morbus is pushing them back in, and they go off on this sort of mission, him and this patient, to find this person. It's fucking the weirdest. It's a combination of heavy metal album cover, a punk rock attitude, and just sequentials that are just sort of muddy and dirty and twisted and. But beautiful in that, do you know what I mean? Dave Kendall's done the Dead World series recently for 2000 AD, and he's got a really interesting style. And it's, I think it's 70 pages long, this is, with a couple of bits at the back as well. It's totally, totally disrespectful of everything ever in the world.
which makes it good. I heard a quote from Pat where he said him and Tony just like pissed themselves whilst writing it. They just laughed their heads off writing this sort of heavy metal horror thing that they've got going on. But yeah, really good. I often think of this book when I think Pat and Tony probably read something by Clive Barker, The Books of Blood, or watched Hellblazer and just sort of laughed and said, "Is that all you got?" And then they wrote this comic. You know, that's where it goes. Yeah. It makes Pinhead look like he's from, you know, My Little Pony tribute comic. I think it's probably the best description.
You can't say fairer than that, can you? what a way to recommend something, Jesus.
Yeah. So if you go to www.millsverse.com and you can get yourself a hard copy or Comixology, you can get a digital copy. There you go, that's my two.
Awesome. So many awesome comics to read. Yeah, as if we don't have enough comics to read, as it is.
Yeah.
But yes, check them all out. And Carl, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
Again. Thanks for having me, guys. All my stuff is better than all of those. Sorry, everyone else mentioned. go give Kyle Stark's money, not those guys. Oh, no, there's enough for everybody. There's enough for everybody.
Yeah, it's a big old loving here on the Awesome Pod. And if you like our brand of love, there's several different ways you can... let us know what you think of it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. That was a fairly weak segue this week.
This is fine.
Yeah, I didn't have a coffee before I started the show. That's the thing. Caffeine's low. If you got any reviews or anything that any new events you want us to talk about, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Thank you for everything that's been sent in, folks. We really appreciate it. We've seen some amazing stuff. I've got a nice little list of stuff to bring up in the next few weeks. And I don't know.
We're working our way through the pile, aren't we? We've got a load of books. Yeah. Thanks to everyone. Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we will announce our next guest or guests. We may have two next week for the Awesome Pod Halloween special. Ooh.
Oh yeah.
Which means I've got to figure out some intro music for that. Lord knows what we're going to talk about. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/AwesomeComicsPodcast, and join the only place on Facebook to go to Facebook for, and that's the Awesome Comics Talk group, which is brilliant. And the only reason I go on that site it seriously is, and we've had some brilliant conversation about making comics and all kinds of stuff at the moment. It's good stuff. Thank you for everyone that joins in on that, and thank you for listening as always. If it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com, if you listen to this on iTunes and you thought, God, I love all those action movies, I need to watch them now, and it's because of this show, then leave us a lovely review, because we need
them.
Have we had one recently? Have we had it?
No.
No. There you go. So please, I know. Someone
go here. Write a review. What are you guys doing?
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you.
Just sitting there, you're riding a bicycle somewhere? Go write a review.
You're on the toilet, you can write a review at the same time.
Yeah. Don't spend too long on the toilet, though.
No, that's true.
Yes, so leave us a review on iTunes. And if you listen to us on the Stitcher, the Podnose, the Podknife, I don't know, there's all kinds of different networks for podcasts. And if you found Pod Bollock.
It's Pod Blumpkin, that's one, isn't it?
Right, enough. If wherever you heard us, thank you very much. And thanks for listening. And from... Oh, no. I was too eager to go. Where can people find us online and etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter, or neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk. is two things going up this week, so both well worth a look.
Oh my word. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Which is brilliant, Dan. And I'm slightly worried because something happened this week, and I thought, has he done another character over? I'm not happy about this.
No one died in the last one.
Really? Because it looked like someone got properly fucked up. I'm slightly worried because it was a character I quite like the look of. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter @JesterDiablo and find out more about my comic @TheRedMouseFromMars.com. And Mr. Kyle Starks, you have been a legend this week. Where can people find you online, etc.?
Hey, I'm @TheKyleStarks everywhere because I'm the only one. That's not true, but it's TheKyleStarks. I'm Doug House Starks on Facebook and Twitter. I have a Patreon account. If you want to give me a dollar, that'd be dope. I talk to people, and I draw things for free and other stuff. And go to your comic book store and buy my stuff. It's good.
It is okay. Very, well, very good.
It is very good. I'd say. Yeah. I've toured through nearly all your books this week. I have to say, I've fucking loved it. Yeah, really.
Thanks,
good.
Man.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You gotta get that dead to win. Now you gotta go read that dog book.
Yeah, I do need to. Yeah, that's yeah. Next. Yeah.
Dogs and Zombies.
You're gonna love it. Yeah. Yeah. Air Bud vs. Walking Dead. What a sell.
Oh my God.
I love dogs.
Amazing. So, thank you for listening, everyone. From Dan, Tony, Kyle, and myself. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics, as we're all going to, or make loads of comics. Kyle seems to make comics like every second of his life. So,
I took a break for you, Jokers.
And you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, I'll be glad to have me back. Absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant. You've been good. Awesome. Yeah, thanks, dude.
Nice.
Thanks, guys. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Oh, we don't thank the audience because they're normally horrible to our faces. So
thanks for everyone listening to me on this podcast.
It's nice to have an appreciative guest. Yeah, no, I'm only, and look, I love all our guests. I know I'm going to get some hate mail for that, so I'm going to sign off now.
We like hate mail.
Well, yeah, partly. Have an amazing week, folks. Read loads of comics, and as always, from all of us here, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.